And welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Friday, everyone. Why am I so pumped? Because it was an amazing, amazing week. So many great things happening. So many bad people who are being put away and so many good people who are having good things happen. And, you know, that's one of the things I want to talk about today. Sometimes when we do things or we have things that happen to us in life, it impacts our dogs. Did you know that? That if you have a dog, your energy can impact your dog's behavior? So if you're having a really up day and you say, my God, my dog is so good today. He usually doesn't like people. Why is he being so good? He's being good because you're happy. When you're happy and you're eager to start out your day and have good things happening, you know what happens? Your dog picks up on that energy. And your dog is going to mimic your behavior and your emotions. Hey, it's common sense, right? If you go home and you had a bad day at work and maybe something happened or your coworker did something bad to you and you come home with an attitude. And welcome back to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. So we're talking about getting your dogs more stable by making your life around the dog more stable. Now just think for a minute. If you come home from work, like I said earlier, and you're upset, you're angry, you got fired, those are the days that your dog is going to look at you and say, uh-oh, I think I might be in charge. Like Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a redneck if, you might be the leader of the household. If your leader, your parent, stops being a parent, it's like what happens to young kids when they're forced to grow up really, really early and they never have childhood. So we want your dogs and your puppies to have a great life, to be fun and happy and enjoying their lives and to be appropriate. But what happens when we have a bad day, our dogs pick up on that. Now, so I don't know if some of you guys might have a spouse or significant other who you can tell the second they pull in that driveway and that door slams or they slam on their brakes or whatever, and you go, oh, well, I'm going to go in the bathroom. I don't want to deal with him or her when she comes in. And that's what happens. So your dog, though, wants to protect you, wants to provide for you, wants to take care of you like a parent would want to take care of a child. And so that becomes the problem because we don't honestly think about that, how our energy and how our lifestyle impacts our dog's behavior. One of the great ways that you can learn more is to go on to wyattslist.com, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, wyattslist.com, which you can put in any question and you can learn and read about all the amazing opportunities, how to fix your dog, how to change your dog's behavior, how to make your dog happier. Because really, isn't that why we got dogs? So we can enjoy their company, their unconditional love, and we can give them a great life. So that's really what we need to start doing. When you're having a bad day, leave it in the office. You have a fight with your wife or your husband or your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever, a friend of yours who you have an argument with, you come home and you're upset. That dog is picking up on your behavior, on your energy. So let's start thinking about ways that we, as good pet owners and pet parents, can start to look at our animals in a different way. So going back to what I mentioned at the top of the hour, the undisclosed breed who bit the son's girlfriend. Well, the family had lost their father around the time they got the dog. Super common. They even named the dog after the father to put a little pressure on this poor little puppy. And what happens? The dog grows up with all of that weakness around him, right? Now he's got the kids, son and daughter, and he's got the mom, and they're all grieving. So the whole first year of this dog's life, he was in a very weak energy. Lovely people, but weak energy, right? When you lose someone you love, especially when it's someone young, it's really a tough thing. So what does that mean for the dog? Well, what it means for the dog is that he starts picking up on the fact that nobody's in charge. There's no parent in the house. And they start to develop behavioral issues. Now, in this particular case, then the lady's mom started getting very, very ill. And her son had some issues. So now, again, this dog, who could have been the best dog in the world and may hopefully be the best dog in the world, because I'm going to help them next weekend. We'll report back to everybody and let you know how he did. But I know I can change him. But I have to change the human in order to change the dog. If I can't change the human, I can't change the dog. I can't fix something if somebody isn't going to be there, boots on the ground, doing things every day as need to be done by a knowledgeable canine behaviorist, not by a local dog trainer, but by a knowledgeable canine behaviorist. So that's where I go in and help people. And we have a team at United Canine Pros, unitedk9pros.com, that we all help other people. We love to do that. But we help change the dogs by changing the people. You know, think about for a moment, think like a dog. How did dogs think? Well, did dogs think, gee, the person down the street is getting a new SUV, so I got to get a bigger one because I'm going to keep up with them? No. Does he think 5 months later, ooh, we're going to go on vacation to Maui in 5 months? No. Does he think about dinner after he eats breakfast in the morning? No. Dogs think in the moment. Dogs live in the moment. Dogs don't, not that they can't remember things, because that's a ridiculous thing that a couple of local trainers told a couple of people that I had, you know, spoken with who were my patients or clients after they were theirs. There's never anybody after me. There's often many, many people before me, but I'm the last one because I fix it. But you can't fix it by throwing cookies or throwing a shock collar around a dog's neck. You just can't do that. So how do you change them? You change the people. You change what the people are doing, and you change the way in which they're handling things. So if I asked you in your house, can I smoke in your house? Most of you would say, oh no, you can't smoke in my house. And there's going to be some husband somewhere who's going to say, yeah, honey, why can't I smoke in the house? But you know what? That's kind of a common courtesy. We wouldn't stink up somebody's house. And we would say really simply, no, I'm sorry, you can't smoke in the house, because it's the rule. There are rules in everybody's house. Think about your kids. Think about friends. Are we allowed when we were kids to drink Hawaiian punch or some red drink, fruit punch drink, and drink it in the, you know, in the living room or in an area that had white carpeting or had new furniture? And of course not. We didn't argue. We just knew, oh, that's the rule. But we feed our dogs from the table, and then we yell at them and get upset with them that they're begging. But we're making it happen. We're doing exactly what we shouldn't be doing. And unfortunately, the dogs are the ones who are getting in trouble. You'll have kids, those of you who have teenagers or little kids, you know, and you say, oh, my dog has allergies. Well, guess what? Your kid is giving the French toast that he's not eating to the dog who's got a weed allergy. And that's what's going on. Or you people who put the dog on a really good food and then you buy like milk bones or some garbage like that that's all full of weed. That can impact behavior too. But there's so much that we can really, really control that why are we not controlling the simplest thing, which is our behavior? Let's think like a dog. Let's do what dogs would do. What would dogs do? Dogs wouldn't start talking about things, and dogs wouldn't start postulating and worrying. When you go to the vet's office, or you make, you know, your appointment and you get ready and you get in the car and you go to the vet's office, those of you who have dogs that you can't take to the vet's office without a muzzle, or you have to call the vet's office early and say, hey, I need an appointment when there'll be no other dog there. Is that a way to live? Is that how you want your dog to live, not being social with other animals or people? That's crazy. So what I want you to start doing is setting rules. Think about, oh, I'm going to go on a great diet and I'm going to eat all healthy. And then 2 days later, you're eating all kinds of junk food. And then you go back on the diet. You're not consistent. That's why your diet doesn't work. You know, if you're trying to work out at the gym and you don't go to the gym, you're not going to lose weight and get muscles. You got to be consistent. Well, with dog behavior, it's consistency as well. But it's not about throwing cookies and becoming a human Pez dispenser, which is my phrase that I've said for 35 years and people love it. But yeah, I feel like some of my patients' family members, the clients, are like human Pez dispensers. All they're doing is treat pouch, throw in mouth. Look, the dog is looking at another dog. Give it a cookie and then it'll look away from the dog. No, you're rewarding the dog looking at the other dog. You just don't know what you don't know. And it's frustrating because I want to help every dog. But in order to help every dog, because as far as I know, dogs aren't able to tune into BBS radio and they're not able to tune into my show. But if dogs could, they would. Because nobody is looking at actual behavior. I don't care why it happens. I care that I fix it. Do I know why? Of course I do. I'm wicked smart. That's why I'm smart enough to know that I need to listen to dogs if I want to do dog behavior. I'm not going to learn it out of a book. Guess what? If I have horses, which I do have quite a few, and I want to learn about horses, I watch the horses. But what do humans do? We give them food, we give them cookies, we yell at them, we scream, we lock them in a room, we lock them behind a gate, and we never listen to what the dogs are telling us. They will tell you what they need. They will tell you what you need to do, but you're not listening to your dog. And as a result, the dogs pick up behavioral issues. You wind up euthanizing the dog and you go get another dog and that dog winds up with issues. It's, you know, yes, there are a lot of dogs out there who have chemical issues. I would say maybe 1 or 2%, if that. But most dogs with behavioral issues, it's because of us. And it always blows my mind when people say, oh, I want to get a puppy so no one else ruins it. Like, you've trained two dogs in your life and you're like the best dog behaviorist in the world. No, you can get lucky. 90% of dogs, 85% of dogs are going to grow up just fine despite you. But this is why some of the organizations that breed puppies and breed 600 or 800 puppies a year and get a 15 or 20% success rate, that's what happens because they have lovely families who are raising puppies and don't have the expertise. But that's what happens. And that's with a dog who should be, they should be at 80%, 90% success rate. So this is the problem. You don't know what you don't know. You may be the best computer programmer in the world. You may be the best car manufacturer in the world. You may be the best teacher in the world, but you're not a dog behaviorist. You don't know what you don't know. But we're human, so what happens? We say, well, I'm a child psychologist, so I'll be a great dog behaviorist. They're different. In case you haven't noticed, children are different than dogs. Dogs are much easier. Children are more complicated. The male children are definitely more complicated because of the defective Y chromosome. Dogs don't have those, just people. But the problem is we're not listening to our dogs. We're talking at them instead of communicating with them. Stop talking at your dog. Stop yelling his name and wondering why he doesn't come to you when you call him. Because when you're yelling, no, Fluffy, bad Fluffy, Fluffy, you're the worst dog. I can't believe it. Stop barking out the window, Fluffy, bad Fluffy. Then your dog is running down the street and you yell, Fluffy, come. And Fluffy figures, oh my God, I'm really in trouble now. And he takes off and gets hit by a car because you didn't know what you didn't know. I'm trying to save your dog's lives. I'm trying to save your life. How horrible would that be? If you had to put your dog to sleep because you didn't know what you didn't know, how horrible would that be, having to go back into the house and telling your child that your dog was laying dead in the road because you yelled his name every time he did something wrong? There are ways to fix things. You don't need to be yelling. Dogs don't yell at you. Dogs do what dogs do because they're dogs. People do what people do because they're people, which puts us at a distinct disadvantage. Stop yelling at your dogs. Stop blaming your dogs. Your dogs are just doing what they're picking up on from you, their owners. There are those bad people, of course, who do like pit bull fighting or puppy mills or all the people breeding these designer disaster dogs that are winding up with severe aggression. I'm working with three right now, the doodle mixes. And you know what? Yeah, you can have a great one, but that's another thing. Guess what? A lot of those dogs have serious chemical issues, behavioral issues that they're starting with. You don't know what you're getting, but I'll promise you that if you rescued a dog, at least you're not spending $4,000 to start out with, and you have a better chance of getting a good dog than you do by going with somebody who's breeding for money, just pet store puppy mill things. So please, snap out of it, you know, like Cher and Moonstruck whacked the other lady and said, snap out of it. Let's do what dogs do. Let's communicate with dogs in a language they understand. I call it Doganese. I trademarked that. Isn't that a great name? Doganese, like Japanese, Portuguese, Doganese. Dogs speak not in words, not in a language that we understand. They speak in bumps, blocks, body postures, nips, growls. You can see it. They communicate through energy. They communicate with puffing themselves up or making themselves smaller, standing straight up or kneeling down or submitting and rolling over on their backs. These are all things that are part of canine language. But you know what? We are humans. We have hubris. We have chutzpah. No dog's going to get the best of me. I'm a human, and I work for whatever you work for. And I have 120 IQ, whoop-de-doo. My ridgebacks have way higher than yours, so don't be too impressed with yourself. But guess what? You are causing your dog's behavioral issues. Not all of you. Some of you are wonderful. A lot of you guys, because people reach out to me, they email, they'll, you know, leave us messages. And I'm grateful for that because I am blunt. You know why I am? Because I'm tired of 3 million dogs dying every year because people don't know what they don't know. And they raise dogs from puppies and they mess them up. Yes, you're messing up these dogs. Now, some of the dogs, yeah, there's probably a couple of percent, maybe 5%. I'll be very generous. 5% of dogs who have chemical issues. And no matter what you do, unless you work with me or one of our team, a legitimate, reputable behaviorist, yeah, you're going to have big problems. But 15% of dogs have behavioral issues. And you know what? The other 13% of the dogs with behavioral issues are caused by the owners. So that's a lot of people. If you think about, you know, let's see how many dogs there are, maybe 60, 80 million dogs in the country, I bet, easily. So let's call it 100 million. So about 15 million dogs have behavioral issues. And of those, 2 million had a chemical reason for it. The other 13 million dogs are called clients or patients, okay? Because those dogs just aren't learning like their buddies are. They're not learning from other dogs. Even if you go to an obedience class, which is great, puppy socialization. Some of my best friends are obedience trainers. But obedience doesn't change behavioral issues. That's kind of like saying, you know, that your spouse is cheating on you. And so, you know, you're going to go for a hotel, you know, to a hotel with him or her. And you say, oh, we're going to fix it because I'm just going to do this or that. No, there's an underlying issue. If somebody is cheating, if somebody wants to be somewhere else, then there's a problem that's underlying. You got to fix the underlying problem. You need to go to like a marriage counselor, right? You need to really get down and dirty and talk. What's going on? Why do you feel this way? I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but yeah, most of you guys are phenomenal pet owners. We would love to have you guys fostering for Merlin's kids somewhere around the country. We'd love to have you volunteering. But, you know, how do we train service dogs? We don't. We teach them. It's not about training, because training is kind of like training somebody how to ski or skate. But they first of all need a natural ability. They need the desire and drive. And almost more importantly, I think beyond everything else, is they need to want to do that. So if you start out and your dog doesn't want to be an obedience champion, don't make him do that. There's so many things, especially now. There's so many dog sports. You can do agility. I've done agility for years. Lure coursing if you have a sight hound. You can do rally obedience, which is a fun thing. You can take your dog on hikes. And in fact, there are people who do it even in New York City, a lovely lady named Tamara. Tamara is also, she goes out and takes these dogs off leash hiking, 8 or 10 dogs at a time. She's wonderful. So there are really, really fun things that you can do with your dog. But, you know, not every dog needs to go to obedience class. The key is getting the dog socialized, getting the dog comfortable in different settings, and making sure that you're doing what that dog needs and speaking to him or her in a language he or she understands. Dog and ease. Think like a dog. Well, now that I've done with my tirade, I'm going to give everyone a couple of minutes to regroup and go to the ladies' room or men's room. And we will be back in a few moments with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, today I've been pretty spirited. I'm pretty spunky today. It's a Friday, and I'm just so happy to be healthy, happy, living in a free country, and just chatting with my good friend and finding out all kinds of cool things. Well, one of the things I was also kind of upset about today is the fact that a lot of times people are bringing in fake service dogs, and we get a lot of calls for that. I'm going to be on TV quite a bit in the next month and a half or so through the end of September, because we get those calls from news media saying, well, why wouldn't they let this lady who had a therapy dog go into the restaurant? I say, because therapy dogs aren't service dogs. Oh, they're the same thing. No, they're not. But you know what? You have to think about this for a minute. If you needed something and people were not being truthful and they were faking it and ruining it for you and for others who needed it, wouldn't you be angry? I'd be super angry. And I do get angry. And the reason I do is that I deal with real service dogs, real dogs who are trained for a year and a half to 2 years, even 2.5 years sometimes. And these dogs who are amazing and wonderful also have a need to help others. So I was just placing some dogs out in California. I was just in San Diego. I was just out in Missouri placing a dog with a little boy with ADHD. And I see the power of dogs, the power of what they have to give us, what they have to offer us. But the problem is we then have people who are bringing their, you know, little foofy dog in, and their foofy dog is not trained, and the dog is going after our dog, or the dog is doing things that are just not right. And people are like, oh, well, I'm just bringing the dog in because it's, you know, I really didn't want to pay the $125 that the airline charges. That's not a good reason to be a fraud, to be a fake. No. So what I want to do today is go through and start teaching you guys how you can start teaching your dog, even if you don't need a service dog. Let's teach your dog to be a better behaved individual, better behaved around dogs, better behaved around people, and hopefully just more of a joy to be around. So how do you train a service dog? Well, it depends on what you're going to have the dog do. But every single dog begins with one very important thing, public access. So if you can't take your dog to the veterinarian without either doping him up or muzzling him, don't take your dog out in public, please. We don't need to do that. If you have a dog who's well behaved, though, and you want to take him places, you can turn him into a therapy dog. And I'm going to go through that as well today. So we all know, because you've listened enough, you know that when I tell you that a service dog is a very different thing. A service dog is a tool. A service dog mitigates or minimizes a disability and allows the owner, the handler, to do things that he or she would never have been able to do before. It's not a joke. It's really not. What does a therapy dog do? Therapy dogs, they're great. They're just good, well-behaved dogs that their owners are volunteers. They go in and they bring the dog and people pet the dog and they feel happy. And they're glad that, you know, the dog is there to maybe in a hospital or in a school or whatever. But therapy dogs also have to be well-behaved. They don't have to be task-trained. They don't have to be the smartest dog. They can be dumb. They just, all their job is to lay there. But when we get into other things like an actual service dog, or then you're going into the emotional support animals, emotional support tarantula. Somebody sent me today, one of you sent me a whole story on that. That was really interesting. I know might be emotionally supportive for the owner, but it would cause me to need an emotional support peacock if I saw an emotional support tarantula actually on a plane. So emotional support, as of right now, needs absolutely no training. And I think that's a problem. Shouldn't we all want our dogs to be better behaved? Shouldn't we all expect ourselves, more of ourselves, and expect ourselves to do better, to do more, to help animals, to help the dogs to be more secure so that you can go to the veterinarian and don't have to wait until everyone's out of the waiting room later and you'll actually be able to enjoy your dog, go to hiking or go biking or do whatever you like? So instead of faking it, why don't we just teach them? What are some good ways to teach your dog how to be well-behaved? Well, first thing is you got to take your dog for a walk. And not just a walk. You have to take your dog for a walk so that the dog understands that you're leading him on the search for food. I call it hunt, wait, eat. And you'll read about this in my book. Shh, happens, S-H-H-H, happens. Dog Behavior 101. That's one of the very important aspects of a dog. If you don't have a situation where your dog is really able to go places with you, then, you know, you're going to have a problem because then you have to then fake it. And what I hear people do a lot is they complain. They say, oh, yeah, my dog isn't good, so I take him to the airport so he flies with me. Well, you are assuming that there will not be another dog there. You know what? I think one time in the last probably 30 to 40 airline flights I've taken in the last year or year and a half, and it's at least 30 or 40 round trips, I would say one time there wasn't another animal in the entire building in the terminal. There's always animals in the terminal. So if you know, for instance, that you have a dog that you're going to be faking to be a service dog, at least call us. We'll help you. We have classes. We can train you to teach your dog how to behave better, because that's really what it's about. It's about teaching your dog how to be a better behaved individual and how to be more of a joy to be around. Why would anybody not want their dog to be better? Why would you want a dog to not be happy? Why would you want a dog to embarrass you and itself? Although, of course, animals really don't realize they're embarrassing themselves or us. If they did, I think they'd do it more often. But you see, what's happening is we don't see consequences for our behavior. And there's, you know, like Delta and Southwest have both had very significant dog bites, one with a little girl and one that a man's face was literally ripped off by a service dog type of dog breed that is now banned from airlines. So because of that man who had to bring his banned breed onto the plane. And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolfe. So before the break, we were talking about the issues with certain banned breeds on planes and the fact that because some people wanted to bring untrained dogs on that were obviously aggressive, now even service dogs, if they are really legitimately trained but of those breeds, they are not allowed anymore on planes. So that one person ruined it for everyone. And if it was an agency that rescued dogs and then trains them for 2 weeks and gives them off to people and pawns them off as service dogs, to train a service dog, you need to know intimately about the disability and you need to know also very intimately dog behavior. So you have to be able to know everything. You can't just do a little bit. You have to do everything. You have to be able to work on things and make sure that your dog is as well behaved as it can possibly be so that you don't have these problems and that we're not causing issues that are going to impact other people, because that's really what's happening. We want to make sure that we have our dogs so well trained and so well behaved that these dogs aren't even going to be noticeable anywhere else. And that's what I'm shooting for with everyone, for you guys to be able to understand how to do things the right way so that we don't have problems like this in the future. So don't fake it. Learn how to do it the right way. You can contact us at Merlin's Kids, MERLINSKIDS.org, UnitedK9Pros.com, or Wyatt's List. .com and the 800 numbers 855-449-9288. Call 1-855 Hi Wyatt, because that's what it spells out. What's great about it though is that you'll be able to learn, you'll be able to teach your dog the right way. You won't be embarrassed, your dog won't be in danger, and somebody's not going to get ripped up and bitten. So how do you train a dog to be a service dog, a real service dog? Well, one thing is consistency. We talked about that in the first half of the hour, right? It's consistency. You don't train one day and not train for a month, especially when you're working. Think about if a dog is really going to be your service dog, you need to take that dog into your life, maybe not all at one time, but that dog has got to be able to do things in pretty much whenever you're going to need to do them. So if you're going to be going into college, you're starting a job, you're going on a vacation, you got to start getting your dog used to all these different scenarios and all different situations. And once your dog can start kind of feeling that you're in charge and that you are, you know, kind of taking care of him, then when you do need your dog and your dog needs to kind of step up to the plate, he will be only too happy to do so. But the problem is people don't want to put in the time. It takes us as professional behaviorists, takes us minimum on like a dog who's the easiest dog in the world, 1,000 hours. We put in about 30 hours a week and on each and every dog. And then after the dog graduates and goes to one of our university partners programs, if you have a kid or if you are a kid and you're interested in potentially having, a university partners program in your university or your college, we can help you with that. So let us know. You can call the 1-855-HI-WYATT and we'll help you on that. But, you know, it's a lot of hours. And the kids who go to college, those dogs will be working 40 or 50 hours a week. They're going on buses and trains and cars and mall trips and all the things that I train them for, the kids. We will have 8 or 9 dogs in the back of a Suburban with 8 or 9 handlers in there. And those dogs get along. They have to get along. The handlers have to be in there, and the dogs have to be in there. So these dogs will be going back and forth. Some of them have flown 3 or 4 times already, different flights, going home with some of the students when they're going back on vacation or they're going to spring break to go back home. It's hours and hours and hours, and it's knowing what to do, and it's having an expert who can help you to do that job. Don't just say, "Oh, I'm just going to bring my pet into an airport." Even if you don't have a service dog or you don't want to pawn your dog off as a service dog, or if you have one that you'd like to be a real service dog, don't fake it. Learn how to do it right. Yeah, it takes a lot of time. That's why it takes experts like us. It takes us 1,000, 2,000 hours to train a dog to be a service dog, because they have to be able to do everything. They have to be able to do it under pressure. I want to tell you, craziest flights going out to San Diego. We actually, when we first got, you know, out there, from San Diego to Missouri, where we have our gorgeous ranch, when we were in San Diego, there was a jetway. We literally had to walk up, and I'm telling you, 4 or 5 levels. I actually posted it on Facebook because that was so crazy. 4 or 5 levels outside on the tarmac. I actually had to walk across the runway and on the tarmac, and we have it we have pictures and all. It's crazy to get into the plane in San Diego Airport. And we were, you know, basically going up this huge jetway. And I had one of our dogs who is a young dog, he's about 2 years old, and he's been through everything. He went up that like a champ. People were tripping and falling. There was an older lady right in front of me, couldn't make it up. She fell down. It was horrible. It was unbelievable. Everybody looked at this dog and was like, "Oh my God, he must be really old. He must be around a while." I'm like, "No, actually he's 2. How? Oh my God, how does this dog do this?" And then we had tight, tight crunched quarters and everything. This dog had been through 2,000, 2,500 hours of training already. So have we ever actually been in that situation on an airplane going up a jetway like that with different levels of it? I've never seen anything like it in my life. And people couldn't believe it because the dog was so steady. But he wasn't steady because we'd done that exact thing. He was steady because we've done so many other things. And when we went up the jet bridge, even though it was a disaster and it was unbelievable, he just walked up like he's done it every day of his life. Then when we came back from Missouri and we landed in Newark, we had the same thing. Couldn't believe it. Terminal A. Came back in, had to walk out. They had to take a bus and give us a bus ride. We were so far out on the tarmac, they had to give us a transport bus that they stuffed us into, that there was no room for a dog, let alone a suitcase. And guess what? The dog actually went underneath. He looked and he thought to himself, "Gee, I can get under there." So he was underneath laying or standing between the suitcases because he was so well behaved because he'd been through not that exact experience, but so many others similar to it. So that's how you train a dog to be really, really good. You don't train them by faking it. You train them by consistency. You teach them. You don't bring cookies and reward them for, you know, first lying down, because then they start looking for food wherever they go. You don't want to confuse them. You are in charge. You go somewhere. That dog has a relationship with you. He's going to follow you. He's going to follow you anywhere. He's going to follow you to the ends of the earth, and he's going to protect you because he trusts you and he respects you and he loves you. And that's why a good service dog, a real service dog, can mitigate a disability, because it's like a tool. It's like a tool that you would use, just like a wheelchair or a walker or a cane, or it would be like some kind of mechanical device that you would use. So actually, service dogs are covered because they're considered to be assistive devices, the same as you would have for any other individual who would need some kind of thing that would make them, you know, obviously not to be, something that we would use to mitigate a disability. So that's where, when you are bringing a dog in, and those of you who are legitimately looking to train your dog, you need to reach out to us. Reach out to us at merlinskids.org. We will help you. We have classes. They're online and then they're hands-on. We have them all over the country. We actually have them in 10 countries. And the island of Aruba, we have people who we train, who can help you, who can be what you need and can give you that hands-on time. But the best thing in the world to do is to try to do it the right way. Try not to fake it. All right. So many people that I deal with who need service dogs or have their own dog that they'd like trained. And that's a great thing, because we can train you to teach your dog. But it takes probably a good year and a half to do it right and to have a dog that isn't going to react to everything that's going on around it. And a dog that can go up a 5-level jetway that's banging and clanging and narrow openings and people jamming into him. And, you know, that's why our dogs take so long. They should. A service dog takes forever to train. They take a long time to train. But the reason they do is so that they're great when you get them. When we give you a Merlin's Kids dog, you know it's the best trained, best behaved dog. You're never going to find a better service dog. And that's why we spend all that time. So if you want to learn how to do it and do it right, contact us, 855-HI-WYATT. We will happily help you. We will set you up to be in one of our courses. And if you are a veteran looking to train your dog to be a service dog or looking for a service dog, we would love to help you too. We're very, very loyal to our veterans who have kept us safe, and we would love to help you. So you're not taking away from somebody else. Let us rescue a dog so that he can rescue you. Well, we're nearing the end of our hour together. In closing, I just want everybody to know that, you know, we've got a lot of heat going on. It's the summer. It's been kind of crazy weather. Make sure you take good care of your dog. Make sure you, if you do have a dog that's a service dog or that's a dog that you take with you in the car, please make sure to keep your car running. And I laugh at people who do this, but I do it too. They leave their car door open so that nobody smashes the door or the window. But, you know, it can get pretty darn hot, and it can get hot very quickly. There are sensors, and we're going to try to interview someone from that company in the upcoming months. But there are sensors you can actually buy that will ping your cell phone in case the temperature starts rising, and you can set the temperature. It's pretty cool stuff. But make sure you take care of your dog. And if you do need our help to train your dog, or if you need our help for any reason, you have a dog with behavioral issues, please reach out to us. We will help you. So for Love a Dog and from Shelter Dog to Service Dog, we're signing out today, Wyatt and Wispa and I, and we're going to go have a nice, big, juicy vegan steak. And love to all of you, and have a wonderful weekend.